Thank you, Steve. It's Phil Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Welcoming in one of our favorite guests, Dr. John Duffy. John, you're one of our favorite guests.
Wow, that is flattering to hear. I had no idea, by the way.
You can change your resume.
I thought it was difficult to have.
No, I think we like having you on.
I think we need you. I think that's what it boils down to.
The new book is available?
The new book is available for pre-order right now.
Just pre-order.
And I have copies here for each and either of you guys. But it actually will be shipped on September 15th.
Very exciting. And the book's title is?
Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety.
Excellent.
It's long enough that I have to read it.
So if you pre-order now, you want to go through Amazon or any book supplier.
Right, and any book supplier, it should be out there, yes.
All right. Before we get to the real tough subjects, I want to ask you something that I think you'll appreciate because I know how much you love baseball.
Yes.
This is very quick. It doesn't have to be a long, involved answer. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
John Lester pitches for the Cubs. He's one of the most consistent pitchers in Major League Baseball.
That he is.
But if you hit a ground ball to John Lester, he cannot physically throw the ball to first base. He's got some mental block about doing that. What's at work there? How can that be?
Yeah. And why isn't everyone hitting it to him?
Yes.
Right.
Why doesn't everyone bunt the ball to John Lester?
Well, I think strategically the Cubs have found an end around that in that John Lester will pitch outside so that the catcher can get the ball to Rizzo very quickly. But that's baseball.
Yeah.
In terms of what's going on in John Lester's head, I do a lot of work with younger athletes. I've done a little bit of work with professional athletes, but they'll often describe this blind spot in their game, in their sport, in their run that prevents them from being everything they want to be. I worked with a distance runner who would get to the end of a half marathon or a marathon, see the finish line, and then pull up, be winning his age group, and then pull up and 10 people will pass him when he gets close. And there's just kind of this psych out moment of, ooh, I don't think I'm a winner like this. There's something playing in his mind, thought that says, I don't think I can do this, even though it's right there. And so I will sabotage it. And I think there's a little bit of that going on. If I were to analyze John Lester from afar.
Yes.
And if John, you're listening, please listen closely. Yeah. I think you're psyching yourself out and you're convinced that you can't make a throw that objectively we know you can make. But, I think you got psyched out a couple of times when you overthrew Anthony Rizzo in one direction or another. And if you do that three or four times, you start to convince yourself, oh, I'm not good at that. And you create this rhythm in your head and this belief system that suggests you can't do that. And the sooner in professional athletics that you believe that, word gets around fast.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
You want to steal second on Lester.
Yes.
All right. So if you're Madden, don't you say, you know what? I want you to throw to first. I don't care what happens. Just do it once. Would that help?
Not only would it help, but a year, you'll probably remember this, last year, a couple of times, he threw to Rizzo, and he didn't even throw hard. He just lobbed it, knowing that the guy had taken a big lead and that he would get this guy out. So he got two outs last year, I think, or maybe three.
Did he throw the ball in his mitt one time, too?
Yeah, he took his glove off and threw the whole glove.
He threw
the
entire mitt and ball together. But I think he needs more of that, Wendy. If he does more of that, and part of it is practice, like just reminding himself that he can turn and throw, and the more he practices that, the more that cognition will dissipate. But if he doesn't do that, and they just accept, like, okay, this isn't your thing,
right,
then that becomes his career. You know what
I mean? Does this exist outside of sports? Because we know that there are kickers that can be frozen where they're not able to hit a field goal. And in basketball, there's guys who just cannot hit a free throw.
Sure.
So other than sports, though, does this happen to people in regular walks of life?
Absolutely. If you think about families and how they work, I will get parents who come in and they'll introduce their son and they'll say, he's not my athlete or he's not my math kid. And the minute you create this shtick around a kid, they begin to adopt that. And they think, I can write a decent paper, but I cannot memorize the Pythagorean theorem.
Right.
And the reality of all of that is that's probably a false limitation. that we're placing on people, you know?
But when we grew up, our parents said that about us, because I might have said that when they were younger, like, this is my athlete, this is my smart one. And then you realize, boy, that's stupid, because you're giving them the title that they may break later on. But our parents did that to us, and we just know what we learned from them.
Absolutely, right. And most of us were able to kind of mitigate that and focus on what we believed our strengths were, but there are probably more strengths we're leaving on the table that we're unaware of, that we think, like, this is just a deficit I need to work around.
This is fixable, though, right?
Most all circumstances. And even if it's, there's, you know, some kids will come to me and they'll say, I've got a learning disability, or I have profound ADHD, so I clearly can't do well in school, for example. And that's not what those things mean. You know, that means, okay, I have this challenge,
right,
and I've got to find a way to mitigate this, you know, but there are ways to mitigate it. There's ways to think about it and behavioral things you can do to mitigate a lot of these difficulties. So, you know, I think the more we think in terms of strengths, and even the idea of, I think I can beat that difficulty, in the John Lester vein, you know, I think I can pass around this and make this work if I do enough practice.
It's just so fascinating, because he's got such amazing control when he's throwing a farther distance from, you know, the pitcher mound.
That is so weird.
Yeah. Doesn't make sense.
Well, it creates a superstition in his head, right?
Yeah.
He begins to believe the mythology that he can't do this because too many times he hasn't. And I love Joe Maddon, but too often I think he kind of buys into that and decides, like, we're going to work around John in this regard instead of just doing what you're suggesting, Wendy. Like, give him practice. Let him make a few of those.
Yeah.
And we were talking about things we learned from our parents. Parenting has changed quite a bit since we were parented, but there are a lot of people that want to stay old school with the parenting.
Yes.
Can we talk about that when we come
back? I would love that.
All that's ahead. It's Bill and Wendy with John Duffy.
There's no need to argue. Parents just don't understand.
Parents don't understand. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. We're visiting with Dr. John Duffy. We're going to talk about his new book that comes out next month, but you can pre-order it. We got some texts. We were talking about summer's over, back to school. My kids started this week, and I said, God, summer's easier for me because I don't have to wake up teenage boys to go to school. And someone texted and said, you know, let them get themselves up. Once they're late a couple of times, they'll figure it out. Don't be a weak mother.
Oh, wow.
That stung.
That's
I'm
a
not
pretty
a
harsh
weak
judgment.
Mother.
No.
And we don't parent like our parents did.
No. It's completely different than it was a generation ago. And we have to remember that there's some good in that, right? So an iron fist was pretty handy a generation ago,
right? It totally
worked. Yeah, it worked in my house. It worked in most people's houses, where a little bit of fear was not... It was useful. It was a useful parenting tool. Now, kids are pretty savvy. Kids are onto us, you know, like...
And they're lawyered up, John.
They're literally...
Kids all have their own attorneys now.
Bill, you are so close to reality. I mean, I've heard kids invoke the DCFS number so many times in my office. Like, you know, if you don't let me take tomorrow off, I'm telling you, I know it's a 1-800-25-ABUSE.
Right, right.
You know? And it's light, but it's still like they're lawyered up a little bit.
I know.
And so the opportunity for parents now isn't about being a weak parent. It's about, like, you can connect with your kids and be allies with them, because I think a lot of us would argue there was an adversarial element once we were teenagers, at least in our household when I was growing up, and most of us do not want that vibe with our kids, in part because that vibe doesn't just go away when you turn 20. So a lot of us, I always ask people, like, how many people are excited when I talk to parents to see their parents on Thanksgiving? And hardly anybody raises their hands, because they're like, well, I'm going to go out of obligation, but I'm not excited about it, you know?
Wow.
And so the different vibe I want families to create is, I want that to be a lifelong relationship that they're starting to create with their kids at really young ages. Does that mean being a soft parent with no, you know, no consequences for actions? No. But does it mean being friendly with your kids? Yeah, it means that. It means, like, you don't have to be their best pal.
But and you shouldn't be.
No, but it doesn't have to be adversarial either, or you're all the way on the outs. And if you're on the outs, you can't be an ally during all the stuff your kid needs you for.
And so the new book is called Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety. There's a lot of anxiety out there right now. I know at one of my kids' schools today, there's an assembly on school shooters.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, we didn't have to deal with that.
No.
Does that add to all this anxiety?
Like you wouldn't believe. So a lot of kids that I work with will not be in school for that assembly because the assembly itself raises anxiety. I may have shared with you guys that I worked with a mom of a very young child, kindergarten, first grade, who had a bad kid drill, which is effectively that kind of assembly, that kind of drill. And she realized, oh, my locker's really close to the door. The bad kid's going to see me and kill me first.
Oh, my God.
And this is like a 6 or 7 year old, you know? So, yes, kids are really anxious for a lot of reasons. I mean, that's one of them. And they're aware of it. You know, you think back to my son was 4 or 5 when Columbine happened. And, you know, I was able to turn off the TV. I could control that narrative. Now, with your 4 or 5 year old, they're going to know. They're going to know what's going on. They're going to hear it from friends. They're going to see it on a notification on an iPad. You really can't protect your kids from all the terrible things that are happening.
So arm them with information.
Yeah. You arm them with information and some degree of comfort, especially when they're young. That, you know, like, we want to make sure this doesn't happen anymore. So people are working really hard on this. But, you know, that's why you're running through the drill.
John, isn't in a case like that, isn't the amount of information you divulge to your child on a can handle basis? And by that, I mean, some kids can handle more than other kids. So you have to know your own child to figure out how much reality that kid can stomach, right?
About the most important thing, Bill, you have to be super discerning about, like, okay, what's my child's age? That's one thing, developmental level and level of sensitivity to this kind of thing. And the best way to kind of wade easily into those waters is to be curious, is to ask them, you know, so these shootings, you know, what have you heard about this stuff? Yeah. What do you know? What's happening? What are you hearing from your classmates? That way you're not inundating them with something way beyond what they're capable of understanding and hearing and integrating. On the other hand, some kids at really young ages, 7, 8, 9, have really kind of in-depth questions about these things.
Sure.
And so I encourage parents, if your child has a specific question, answer the question. You don't have to give every gory detail, but there's some anxiety with having a question that goes unanswered, wondering, like, what is dad not telling me?
But with that little kid who figured out that the part where their locker is close to the door, you can't lie to them and say, this could never happen to you. This happened in another town, but it would never happen to you, because that's a lie.
It's a lie.
But you have to figure out how to palatably say it to the child to make them realize.
Listen, parenting today is a tightrope walk. It's very difficult, and the difficulty has shown up in the last 5, 10, 15 years. I think it's gotten far, far more difficult because of these kinds of issues, and because there are no sweeping answers, right? You know, it'd be easy to say, here's what you tell your kid at 7, here's what you tell your kid at 10. But the truth of the matter is, if your child tells you, I'm the closest one to the door.
Right.
You don't want to deny that and say, no, honey, you're fine.
Right.
Because that effectively says, you can't talk to me about it. You know,
you know
you're not fine.
Yeah.
So you want to give them some comfort, but you want to arm them with some information too.
Right.
Like, this stuff does happen. That's why we have the drill, you know, and the idea is to keep you safe. And I'll talk to your teacher about that, you know, and make sure that you're safe. But you don't want to blow it off. Blowing it off creates anxiety for sure.
What do you think the percentage is of someone listening right now, of people listening, that like everything's going smoothly, like their kids don't have anxiety, they're not going through terrible teens? What do you think the percentage is of no issues at all?
5, maybe.
Honestly?
In those 5, I would say, mom and dad might not know everything.
See, that's the question. Do you know if everything's going so smoothly, are you maybe just unaware? How do you tell when just a teenage kid is not just being a teenager and there's more?
Right. All right. So I think the norm these days is you're going to see some anxiety, some depression, some attention issues in virtually all your kids. It's an anxiety-inducing time. It's cultural and societal, and it's pretty sweeping. I don't know the kid who is entirely immune to that. So you can go into parenting knowing, like, this doesn't have to be pathologizing your kid. This doesn't mean, you know, psychiatrists and medication and, you know, the whole squad getting involved. But it does mean you need to parent with more intent and deliberation and discussion than you might have just a few years ago.
Yep.
He's Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist. His first book, The Available Parent, has helped me so much, and I can't wait to read the new one, Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety. You can go to drjohnduffy.com. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, guys.